can't tell if the chemistry's good by looking at it. It wasn't clear yesterday. For the last time, the saltwater pool is a chlorine pool.
This is the Talking Pools Podcast with pool pros from every region in the country. If it happens in a pool, you'll hear about it here. Everything from tips and hacks to the latest tricks and trends. Breaking news, we lay it on the line. We tell it like it is because we think you deserve to know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tuesdays with Dan. Thanks for joining me again today. Going to continue down our technical end of things with codes and ways, proper ways to do things, proper ways to look at things. I know we've been talking about electricity, the National Electric Code, and wiring and wire sizing and so forth the last couple of weeks. And today I thought I'd jump into the National Fuel Code relative to gas appliances, and specifically for us, gas-fired swimming pool heaters. So in our industry, we see in our market especially a number of things that are done incorrectly, and we see them on the service side almost, I would say, multiple times a week, especially this time of year. We're in April. We're doing openings of pools, getting everything up and running, and as we're, you know, firing these heaters or getting them ready to go, we're often running into things that we see that are problems, either from a performance standpoint or from a potential of damage to the heater itself, or even worse, potential harm to people, to structures, things like that. So I thought I'd spend a little bit of time today going down some of the things that we should be looking for when we're out there, and understanding that, as with anything, as the last professional out there, we've got some inherent liability if we don't identify some of these issues that could cause harm in any way, shape, or form. So being aware of them and taking some steps that some may seem as being drastic is often the right thing to do. So, you know, certainly from the standpoint of gas appliances, gas heaters, the installation is the first point, and typically that's done when the pool is built. And everybody will say, oh, it was inspected, there were, you know, it was done in the code because it was inspected. That's not necessarily true. Inspectors often miss things. You know, they're walking into a backyard. Most inspectors inspecting pools, to be honest, I don't feel have a great awareness of the swimming pool. They may be great at inspecting homes when they're being built and so on, but when they get into the swimming pool environment, it's a little bit out of their day-to-day. So they're just not as familiar with it, and it's very easy for them to have a little bit of, miss something. They overlook something. A couple of the things that we run into real frequent when we're out servicing or opening pools and getting heaters put online is the heater's location relative to a number of things. Many of us have probably seen heaters that have been installed inside of some sort of a structure, be it a shed, a lean-to, God forbid, a garage or a basement, but without any venting at all on them. Right, it's a gas appliance, no different than the furnace in your house or hot water heater might be, where if you're burning gas, you got to exhaust the fumes. You got to let, you know, there's got to be flue pipe. It's got to be properly installed, all that type of stuff. And we see all too often where a heater gets put inside of a shed and there's no venting for the flue gases done whatsoever. Definite no-no. It's got to be vented. That is a situation that we're going to disable the heater. We're not only going to not turn it on in the case of opening a pool, but we're going to internally go into that heater and disconnect something so that if the homeowner were to just simply go and turn it on, it's not going to fire. We're going to red tag it with a warning tag that's very obvious to anyone that comes close to the unit that it should not operate until the defect is corrected. We're going to take pictures of that tag and pictures of how we disabled it. So from a liability standpoint, if something should happen down the line, a homeowner figures out where we pulled the wire, they hook it back up. They have another company out or a friend that knows something about heaters and they get it going. And then that shed or garage or whatever it is catches fire or carbon monoxide kills somebody. We've always got pictures to go back to other than just our word that we did this. We're also going to notify the customer in ways that we have the ability of tracking. We're going to send them text messages that we can screen shoot, send them emails, ideally, that we have some record of it. Or what we've started doing in the last couple of years, honestly, is we provide a quote for correcting what the situation is. And when we send them that quote, we send it through an electronic signature service. We use Adobe eSign, but there are many services out there. And the nice thing about that is Adobe shows when we send something to somebody, hey, your heater's not vented. It needs to be done. It's dangerous. This is why someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to die. You're going to burn something down. Here's what we've come up with as a cost to repair it, to get it corrected and get that heater up and going for you. Whenever whoever that is emailed to looks at it, Adobe has a record of it. It identifies the IP address that the computer was at or the device was at, whether it's a phone or a tablet, and says they looked at it at this date and time. If they look at it multiple times, it tracks every single one of them. So it gives us further proof, almost like a sending a certified letter, right? If they actually sign for that letter and you put a return request on it, and we do that for many things as well, you get that card back from the postal service that you can keep on file to prove they got what you sent them. Well, the Adobe eSign is just easier. It's actually far less expensive than doing a return receipt certified letter. Takes less time and gives us the ability of instantly downloading a copy. Even if they never sign it, we can download an audit trail and put it in their file. So we've got it forever, proving that we've identified a safety issue. We gave them an opportunity to have our company repair that, and you know whether they do or don't certainly is up to them, but it hopefully then never comes back to us.
Join the Council for the Model Aquatic Health Code, aka CMAC. CMAC is a member-driven organization that keeps the Model Aquatic Health Code sustainable, current, and complete. Your expertise is needed. Learn more at CMAC.org. That's CMAHC.org.
We gave them an opportunity to have our company repair that, and you know whether they do or don't certainly is up to them, but it hopefully then never comes back to us. Heaters indoors not vented is not the most prevalent thing we run into. Some of the things that we run into that are much more prevalent is the location of the heater relative to the home and openings in the home, such as a window or a door or even some sort of a like a forced air inlet. There are many, many, many times that that equipment pad is right up against the house, and right above the equipment is a window into the kitchen or the living room or who knows what. Any operable window, any window that was manufactured to be opened, has to be at least 4 feet away from your gas appliance outside, 4 feet away from the exhaust point of the appliance. So, you know, I think most of you know we're primarily a Pentair shop. We do Master Temp heaters. We also do Raypak heaters. They're RP2100 series, not the most current unit. But on a Master Temp heater, the flue or the vent, if you will, the discharge is off on one side. So the heater itself is roughly 2 foot square. You know, you can sometimes rotate that heater in a way that you get the vent itself 4 feet away from a window very readily. The old style heaters, the Teledyne Lars or J&D or the Hayward H series, the Raypak RP series, those are a little bit more difficult because the venting is basically through the entire top of the heater. So your nearest point of any vent portion of that heater needs to be 4 feet away from that window. If the window is above, if it's more than 4 feet above the heater, you're fine. Otherwise, you need to be 4 feet horizontal from the heater, from the window. Sorry, the window can be 4 feet above. No worries, you're good. 4 feet or more. But otherwise, you need to move the heater 4 feet away. So if we get out to a property and we find that there's a window that is operable, that's less than 4 feet, we're going to give them some pricing options as to relocating that heater or rotating the heater if that is something that'll get it more than 4 feet away to make sure that there isn't carbon monoxide going inside the house. And of course, all the time we get people go, oh, I never open that window. Well, it doesn't matter. If the window was designed to be an operable window, it's not just a solid pane of glass that has never been intended to be open. It has to be 4 feet away from it. That goes for doors as well. So if you've got a door into the house, a patio door, a door into a garage, a door into a shed, the same 4 foot dimension applies. You got to be 4 feet away from it. So we see that quite a bit, and it is one of the things that, yes, an inspector at some point should have caught that. It's not new to the National Fuel Gas Code. It's something that's been around for a long, 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 long time, but it exists. And if you go out and work on that heater, you get that heater going, you open the pool, you turn the heater on, and it is not a safe environment. You've just accepted liability for anything that's going to happen to that. So don't put yourself in that position. Some of the other things that we see is the electrical feeds on heaters that are in disrepair or not properly done, not powered. I mean, everything that we do has to be, I don't care what it is, if it's related to water, it's on a GFI, right? Just safety first. What about bonding? We talked last couple episodes about electrical issues and bonding. Any gas heater and anything metal equipment wise has to be bonded. And we frequently walk up and find heaters that are not bonded. Now we've actually found that with some of the new style heaters, the Master Temp style, and I'm sure the new Raypak version and Hayward and Jandy's versions that are all of that similar, you know, single burner, power vented, sealed combustion, that heaters not bonded can actually have damage to the exchangers from stray electricity, stray current. And we've seen it. We've seen it with probably at least three of the manufacturers' heaters that are out there, that there was damage, and it takes an appearance of from the outside of the exchanger in, as opposed to the inside out. It's not a condensation corrosion type of situation. It's something, it's got a unique appearance to it. And the heaters are not bonded. So the stray current is ending up causing this damage. And, you know, certainly from a safety standpoint, because of being an electrical component with metal, we need to make sure that it's bonded to the bonding grid of the pool, just like anything else is supposed to be bonded, as we talked about the last couple of weeks. Our technicians carry bonding wire and all different types of, you know, bonding lugs and burndies and things like that on their truck. So if they run into it, they simply bond it with the rest of the grid and add it to the cost of whatever it is we're doing. If it's an opening and we charge, you know, whatever, $400, $500, $600, $700, $800, whatever it is for the opening, it doesn't take real long if you got the stuff on your truck, a bare number 8 wire, and some, you know, there are various methods of bonding for attaching that wire properly. Wire nuts are not one of them. Just a simple screw with the wire wrapped around it, a sheet metal screw or something, is not one of them. You want to make sure you've got some appropriate bonding lugs and burndies and split bolts and things like that with you. But it's something that takes minutes, typically. You know, you're probably, by the time you walk to the truck, get the stuff, get back in the yard and put it together, you're not going to spend 10 minutes doing it. And it's required by National Electric Code. And also, you know, if you were to look at the heater manufacturer's installation manual, of course, they're requiring that it be bonded. And it's something that you can make some money doing and show that you're more professional than whoever it was that installed it or has been servicing it for years prior. And, you know, hopefully that gives you some continued business and continued faith from the clients to keep calling you back when they need something done. other things we see, and this is not just with heaters, both electrical supplies, how many times you walk out and you find a outdoor weatherproof box, bell box, that is in disarray. The cover is loose because the screws have rusted and snapped, or it's broken. It's been hit by a weed whacker, a lawnmower, God knows what. And everything inside is exposed. It's wrapped six times with duct tape and electrical tape and caulk and whatnot. Well, all of that stuff is nonsense. And you should be identifying those as potential hazards and treating it in the same way as you would a heater that was installed in a garage with no vent on it. It's not safe. And let's talk to the homeowners about it. Let's talk to them about what it's going to cost to repair. If it's, you're in an area where you're not allowed to do those types of repairs, make sure you got someone in your pocket that you can refer them to. And then in some way, try to make sure that you're tracking, you've got the ability of tracking that you told the homeowner, hey, you've got this problem. You need to get it fixed. You shouldn't use it until you do. Here's the name of a competent contractor who I know will be able to handle this for you. Make sure you reach out to them and get it corrected. And then after it's corrected, if you need me to come out and put that thing back online or whatever, I'm happy to do that for you. But do it in a way that you can track it. Email might be the easiest. If you don't want to get into paying for an electronic signature service, they're not that expensive. It's something you can do from almost anywhere pretty readily. But we pay for Adobe e-sign documents. I want to say about $2.30 or $2.50 for every one that we send. Again, far cheaper than a certified letter and much less time than writing up a letter, putting in an envelope, sending it certified, waiting for the return on it, all that kind of stuff. So different ways of covering your butt. The other thing that we see all too much has to do with gas supply. Done wrong, I should say, is gas supply. Gas pipe size, gas meter size, all plays into the heater, its performance, its longevity, damage to it, things like that. And in our market, you know, it's real common to see, the gas valve on the heater has a 3/4 inch inlet. So the builder, when they build it, they run a 3/4 inch gas line to it. And that gas line might run 100 feet, or it might run into the house to where the mechanicals in the house are. Baseline starting point for any gas line, natural gas, for a pool heater should always go straight to the gas meter on the house. Now, there are ways that it can be tied into a feed that exists in the house, but usually, if it's not done when the house is built and planned and engineered in that way, you're not going to have enough gas. Even if you size your pipe properly from that point on, you're not going to have enough gas. You know, the gas feed from the meter on the outside of the house to where the mechanicals in the house are located was sized by an engineer, hopefully, that based on the BTU requirements of the items in that home. So you've got a 100,000 BTU furnace, you've got a 40, 50,000 gallon hot water heater, you've got a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 stove in the kitchen, or BTU stove in the kitchen, you've got a dryer, X number of BTUs, right? So that pipe size and length from the meter into that first location where the mechanicals are was determined by someone based on that stuff. And if they didn't know that a swimming pool was going to be added that was going to draw off of that same trunk another, even if it's only 125,000 BTUs, you know, like I just said, a furnace for a house, commonly 100,000 BTUs, sometimes only 80,000. Your pool draw, and I would argue that almost none of us are using 125,000 BTU heaters. We're using 250s, we're using 400s. The gas demand for the pool is typically more than twice of what any normal home would be. You know, you get into a normal home, I'll say a 25 to 3,500 square foot home. Your BTU usage of a 3,000 square foot home, the demand is usually somewhere around 250,000 BTUs at the high side. So you go out and put a pool in with a 250,000 BTU heater, you just doubled that. And that supply line from the meter into the mechanical room was based on probably the 250 that the house is drawing. You tap off that and go out to the pool. It's not going to be efficient. It's not going to work. You're going to end up with problems at some point in time in one way or another. So keep those kinds of things in mind. And, you know, again, the baseline is it needs to go to the meter. Again, it doesn't have to, but unless you're going to get engineers involved that are, you know, going to be able to tell you yes or no, tapping off of what's going on in the house almost always is not a good idea. And, you know, just like with the hydraulics of swimming pool plumbing relative to pumps and filters and, you know, circulation, gas has similar dynamics in that the longer the pipe is, the smaller the diameter of a pipe, or even the number of elbows, right? We talk all the time in plumbing about how 90 degree elbows cause a lot of resistance and are not good for flow. Well, similar things are going on with gas line. So, you know, if you were to look at the National Fuel Gas Code's charts for pipe size, and I've got one in front of me right now, that 3/4 inch pipe that I was talking about, right? The inlet to the heater is 3/4 inch. If you've got a 250,000 BTU heater, you can only have a total of 20 linear feet worth of 3/4 inch pipe feeding that from your source. Now, with that, every elbow and the different diameters of pipe and such have different factors to them, but every elbow adds to that linear feet. So let's say that your heater's 20 feet away from the gas meter. Oh, well, I'm good. I only have 20 feet of 3/4 inch pipe. Nope, that's wrong, because you've got 90s in there. You've got a T where you've got your sediment trap. You've got a T coming off of the meter. You know, a general rule that I use, and this isn't exact, but it gets you pretty close, is that every 90 degree bend that the gas makes on 3/4, 1, 1.5 inch pipe is around 3 linear feet worth of pipe. So if you're at the meter and you got a 90 that goes down into the ground, once you get in the ground, you got another 90. That pipe comes out of the ground at the heater with another 90, and then it goes into the towards the heater with another 90. If you have a proper sediment trap, there's another 90 going down to a T that is essentially a 90 going into the heater, right? If I remember right, I think I just put in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 90s in that loop. 6 90s at 3 feet apiece, that's 18 feet by itself. And you don't even have a single foot of pipe included in that. So if you're 20 feet away, guess what? 3/4 inch isn't going to do it, is it? And if you have a chart, National Fuel Gas Code chart, and if you don't and you want one, send an email to talkingpools@gmail.com. Rudy will forward that to me, and I'll make sure I send you a copy of one that I've used for years that you can keep on your phone or print it and put it in your truck or whatever. But, you know, if it truly you're looking at a run in that example that's closer to 40 feet, right? 6 elbows, 3 feet apiece is 18 plus 20 feet of linear pipe, you're 38 feet, so 40 feet. Now, you also probably should have shutoff valves. I would have 2 at that installation, 1 shutoff valve coming right off of the meter, another shutoff valve right out to the heater. You also have a union. All of those things, just like in plumbing for the pump and filter, add restriction. So I would jump up to like a 50-foot nominal length, equivalent length, if you want to call it that. And to get 250,000 BTUs through 50 feet, you're jumping up to 1-inch pipe. 1-inch pipe will actually give you 285,000 BTUs. Now you can tap off of the meter, 1-inch pipe right there, put your 90s, put your shutoffs, put your unions, put it in the ground, pop up the other side, get your sediment trap done properly with a proper change of direction. It's another thing that we see often not done well. And you have plenty of gas to run a 250,000 BTU heater. Now, if you've got a 400,000 BTU here, you're going to have to go up on that same 50-foot parameter up to 1.25-inch pipe before it's going to give you enough BTUs. At 1.25-inch, you actually have 580,000 BTUs, so you have more than ample gas for that 400. But just because the gas valve is 3/4 doesn't mean the pipe is going to be 3/4 for the entire run. Most areas today are requiring that we're using plastic Normac pipe in the ground. And most municipalities require that pipe terminate, come out of the ground with risers that are designed to protect the pipe from being hit by lawnmowers and weed whackers and things like that. It also keeps that everything in the ground is plastic. The there's no corrosion then going on in the ground, so on and so forth. Running pipe, we want to make sure that we're paying attention to local code. And again, if you're in an area that you're not able to do gas line installations or gas line connections, and obviously you want to have someone in your back pocket who can do those things for you, that you can either refer if you run into something that's wrong, people to, or to maybe subcontract to help you get more business in what you're doing. But definitely make sure that you're able to do this work before just jumping into it. But when you do get into it, make sure you know what you're supposed to be doing before you just jump into it. Gas meters. I see. So gas supply is also connected to gas meters. And it's another problem we see all the time. An existing house is built. The example I had, a 3,000 square foot home with 250,000 BTUs worth of demand. The gas companies will size the meter based on the demand in the house. And if they don't know there's a pool going on, they're not going to base it on the pool. Most meters are rated in cubic feet per hour. It's how many cubic feet of gas per hour that meter can pass through it, right? And the gas meter, in terms of natural gas installations, gas supply to that meter is under high pressure. The meter itself has a regulator that drops it down to low pressure, which is what all of our appliances are operating on. Inches of water column, essentially. The translation between CFH, cubic feet per hour, and BTUs, it's basically a one-to-one kind of correlation. If you've got a meter that's rated 250 CFH, that can provide 250,000 BTUs. So if that house was built, 250,000 worth of stuff in the house, there's a meter on the side wall of that house that says 250 CFH, that's the rating on it, and you go and put a pool in the backyard with a gas heater, guess what? The meter now is no longer big enough. So we need to have the homeowners reach out to the gas company and say, hey, I need you to evaluate my current demand based on the pool that's going in and get me a new meter. Years ago, in our Chicago market in Illinois, the gas company used to do that for free. They're in the business of selling gas. So they would come out and pop out the 250 and put in a 400 or a 600, and they didn't charge the homeowner anything. That's no longer the case because now the gas company is subcontracting that work and so on and so forth. There is some sort of a fee for it, but it doesn't really matter. If it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. Well, my heater in my house never runs when my pool heater runs. Get that all the time, right? Wrong. Today, beautiful day in our market. It's probably 75 degrees outside. Tonight, it's probably going to get down to, might be in the upper 50s, maybe even low 50s. That heater very likely is going to run tonight, and the furnace in the house is going to run tonight. And if your meter isn't capable of providing more than what the total demand is, you're going to run into a problem. And the problems that you get with that, right? The heater's running. It'll run with a lot of soot. It's got a lazy flame. There's going to be a lot of soot in it. The soot is corrosive. Condensation, when the heater is running, that soot's going to gather on the exchanger. It's going to clog it up, and it's going to corrode it from the outside in. It's going to cause a number of issues over the years that's going to make that heater not work. Is it dangerous? Not really in the way of a heater under an open window or a heater that's not vented in a garage or something like that might be. But is it going to cause harm to a person? Nah, probably not. But it's going to cause that heater not to last as long as it should, not to operate as efficiently as it should. Now, if you're going to go out and buy a 400,000 BTU heater, you want to get 400,000 BTUs out of it when you're putting 400,000 BTUs into it, right? So if the gas line's not big enough, the heater may actually operate, but it's not operating at a 400,000 BTU level. You know, you're be getting less BTUs out of it than you should be. So, again, watch all of those things. Gas meter size, gas pipe size, number of elbows, heater location from things, windows, doors, forced air inlets, all that kind of stuff. Also, heater location, make sure you're looking at that relative to like high efficiency heater furnaces in a house. Their intake and discharge pipes coming through the side of the house. We see all too often where a pool heater is put too close to the PVC intake and discharge for a furnace in the house. That's a no-no. The heater's location relative to an air conditioning unit outside. You know, you can't be right next to an air conditioning unit outside. Most of them have to be 4 or 5 feet away, if I remember. But the I think that's more of a manufacturer-specific thing. I don't know if it's a National Fuel Gas Code thing. I may be wrong on that, but certainly you can definitely refer to any owner's manual, installation manual, to get the specifics of whatever heater you're looking at if you think there's a concern. Too close to the air conditioner unit often is mostly relative to the longevity of the pool heater as opposed to anything else, but has to do with the swirling of the gases and the gases being drawn back into the intake of the heater and having that caustic flue gas being used to recombust and go through this thing again that can cause damage to the heater. But there may be other things that play into why it should not be as close as that to the heater too. Well, as I said, wanted to get into some of the specifics of more code and proper ways of doing things and things to look at while you're out there servicing to make sure that you're not putting someone or something in harm's way, and more so that you're covering your own butt when you're doing stuff that you don't stumble into a liability issue that you had not thought about. So if you have any questions or comments about this, feel free to reach out to us again, talkingpools@gmail.com, and Rudy will certainly forward it on to me or someone who can get back to you and help you with whatever your question is. And with that, I'm going to say see you next week. Tune in to all the rest of our group as we talk Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday about all kinds of different things. Hope you guys are getting off to a great spring this year, and we'll talk to you next week.
I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening today. I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. Listen, it's been a couple of wacky, crazy, screwed up years from pandemic to Poolmageddon. I just want you to know that we are all in this together. If there's anything that we can do for you, send me an email at talkingpools@gmail.com. Again, that's talkingpools@gmail.com. We're here. This is your podcast. We are the Pool People's Podcast, of the pool people, for the pool people, by the pool people's podcast. This one is about you. So thank you for tuning in and listening. Do me a favor, click subscribe before you go. That way you don't miss an episode.